The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, we made it to a Friday. Welcome to it. I am Nicole Sandler. Joining us today is going to be Will Bunch, our old friend from the Philadelphia Daily News and the Philly Inquirer, to talk about a couple of columns that he's written lately. But I got to start today, again with, Roy Moore, just because that is the news.
If these allegations are true, Roy Moore should step aside. For all the obvious reasons. Very disturbing allegation.
It's a devastating, nasty story. If the revelations, if that's true, I don't believe there'd be any place for him in the U.S. Senate.
It's very, very disturbing what I've read about. And I'll have more to say about it, I'm sure, after I learn more.
If they're true, we should step aside.
Obviously, those are serious. What I've heard of them, and I haven't read them, are very serious.
If there is any shred of truth to these stories, he ought to step aside. And now.
Is he fit? Would he be fit to serve in the Senate if this was true?
No. If there's any shred of truth, he ought to step aside immediately.
So you have four women come forward, give their names, right? And they're not, it's like they didn't go searching out the Washington Post. The Washington Post went digging because they went down to Alabama and kept hearing these stories of Roy Moore going after young teenage girls when he was younger. And they went digging and uncovered these four women. And they interviewed 30 people for this story. There's just a lot of smoke there. When there's that much smoke, you know there's fire. So shortly after the Roy Moore story broke yesterday, we got the story about Louis C.K., right? The allegations from five women, four who named themselves, one who chose to remain anonymous, who said that he acted in sexually inappropriately with them. Let's put it that way, rather than give the details. There's, you know, you can read the story at the New York Times, and you'll need a shower afterwards. I'll tell you that much. Well, today, Louis C.K. admitted that the allegations are true. He released a statement, a fairly lengthy statement, in which he, you know, much like Kevin Spacey attempted to do, made excuses, it seemed. But he said, listen to what the women are saying. They're telling the truth. Nowhere in this, it was two or three paragraphs long, the statement, did I see the words, I'm sorry. Although he did say something that he regretted what he'd done. He didn't apologize to the women that he did this to. And yes, when a man does something like this, he is doing it to the women, even if all he does is expose himself. But Roy Moore is still denying the allegations. However, even though all these Republicans in the Senate are saying, well, if it's true, how do you prove something like this? The statute of limitations is long expired, right? Unless someone comes forward with a much more recent story, which is unlikely. There's no way to prove it. It's the word of the pervert against the women who are making the allegations. And yeah, I know I sound pretty decided, but again, there's a whole lot of evidence there. This story was very well sourced, and it just seems sort of like a no-brainer, right? Well, today, the NRSC, the National Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee, I believe that's what the NRSC stands for. It's the fundraising arm of Senate Republicans. They ended their joint fundraising agreement with him. So it's the climate that we're in now. And I don't know when it all changed. It changed with Harvey Wasserstein. Is that what his name is? Ugh, I'm drawing a blank when it comes to him. It really I think that's what the straw that broke the camel's back was. And people, women, men, we're not taking it anymore. So I don't think Roy Moore is going to stand down. The thing is, he can't pull out from the race. It's too late. The election is December 12th. So it's just over a month away. It's too late to get his name off the ballot. It's too late to substitute for another name. If he were to pull out, if he were to say, I'm pulling out of the race because I did some horrible things, which again, don't hold your breath. Even if he'll still be on the ballot, and if he were to win, his Weinstein. Thank you, Harvey Weinstein. See, I'm trying to forget, and I guess I can't. So even if he were to say I'm pulling out of the race, I'm taking my name out of contention. If he were to win, his win would be nullified. And Doug Jones, who seems to be a really great candidate, like a really great guy, would win. Now, what we found is in Alabama, state officials are more willing to get behind a pedophile than they are a Democrat, which is just mind-blowing. Some of the tweets, some of the stories that came out yesterday were nauseating, and I'll have them in What's News, so I'm not going to repeat them for you here now. But I do want to alert you to something else that's going on. And that is, while we're all, fixated on this story and Trump is out of the country, something else is going on that we're not paying a whole lot of attention to. And I happened to catch wind of it last night on Chris Hayes' show. He does that thing one and thing two thing. Well, in his thing one, he told the story, and I'm going to read to you a little bit from the LA Times, because this is mind-blowing. Brett Talley, President Trump's nominee to be a federal judge in Alabama, has never tried a case, was unanimously rated not qualified by the American Bar Association's Judicial Rating Committee, has practiced law for only 3 years, and as a blogger last year, he called Hillary Clinton Hillary Rotten Clinton instead of Rotten, get it? Hillary Rotten Clinton. And he pledged his support for the NRA. This is a judge, mind you, a judge who's supposed to be neutral, showing he's anything but neutral. He's wholly partisan. Yesterday, the Senate Judiciary Committee on a party line vote approved him for a lifetime appointment to the federal bench. Again, a lifetime appointment to the federal bench. This should be shocking to everyone. A woman named Kate Harlow writes for Mother Jones magazine, and apparently she wrote about this phenomenon that Trump is quickly nominating a huge number of federal judges for lifetime appointments at Mother Jones. And she had a thread on Twitter. She said, legislation can be repealed and executive orders undone, but federal judges are rarely removed from the bench. Supreme Court hears only about 80 cases out of the 7,000 to 8,000 it's asked to review each year. In a majority of cases, these lower court judges have the final say on big constitutional questions. She says, what's scarier is who Trump is nominating. This cohort of nominees is less diverse than judges appointed by every administration dating back to Ronald Reagan. And of course, she writes, they're extremely conservative. She said, ultimately, by pushing to confirm so many judges so quickly, the Trump administration is working hard to ensure that his legacy will last a long, long time after he's gone. Now, she does admit there's very little that the Democrats or anyone, frankly, can do to stop this, but we should all be paying attention. And the other thing to realize is that the reason there are so many vacancies for Trump to fill is because the Republicans, the obstructionists, you know how Trump is always calling the Democrats the obstructionists? Well, the Republicans blocked all of Obama's judicial appointees for 4 years when they took control of the Senate. McConnell wouldn't even put them up for a vote. Most of the courts weren't fully filled. Seats kept open for years, just like he kept the Supreme Court, Scalia's seat open for almost a year, waiting to see who would win this election. And so now they're stacking the courts with these conservatives. That's Mitch McConnell for you. That's Mitch McConnell at work. So this is going on. In addition to that, I'm just going to play you one clip here. That should blow your mind, too. There was a hearing yesterday for, well, I'll let Chris Hayes introduce it.
President Trump is nominating some extremely unqualified people, but one Senate confirmation hearing this week was especially cringeworthy. Kathleen Hartnett White was nominated to lead the White House's Council on Environmental Quality, which is, in other words, the nation's top environmental advisor in the White House.
Climate change is real.
I am uncertain.
You're uncertain.
No, I'm not. I'm sorry. I jumped ahead of my climate change is of course real.
Human activity affect climate change?
More than likely, but the extent to which I think is very uncertain.
Of the additional heat that has been captured in the atmosphere as a result of greenhouse gas emissions, do you know how much of that excess been captured in the ocean? Is it more or less than 50%? Do you even know that?
No.
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 Okay.
But I believe there are difference of opinions on that, that there's not one right answer.
Oh, my God.
Really? You think there's serious scientific opinion that it's below 50%?
Yes.
Okay. Wow.
Wow.
Do you think that if the ocean warms, it expands? Does the law of thermal expansion apply to seawater?
Again, I do not have any kind of expertise or even much layman's study of the ocean dynamics and the climate change issues.
And she will likely be confirmed as the chief environmental advisor in the White House along party lines. We are so screwed. So screwed.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
On the day that Senate Republicans rolled out their tax reform plan, the headlines were hijacked by a bombshell Washington Post report alleging that Roy Moore, now a candidate in the special election for a U.S. Senate seat from Alabama, initiated a sexual encounter with a 14-year-old girl when he was 32. MSNBC's Willie Geist has the details.
Lee Korfman tells the Post she and her mother were sitting outside a courtroom when Moore approached them, struck up a conversation, and offered to watch the girl while her mother went inside for a child custody hearing. One of the Washington Post reporters who broke the story told our Katie Tour what allegedly happened next.
After the mother went in, he got her phone number and subsequently picked her up around the corner from her house, drove her about 30 minutes away to his home in the woods. Twice did that. The first time there was kissing, and then the second time he took off her clothes. He took off his own clothes. He touched her over her bra and underwear and guided her hand to touch him over his underwear.
NBC News has not independently verified these accusations. Korfman never filed a police report and has not filed a civil suit. We should also note the age of consent in Alabama was then and is now 16 years old. Again, she was 14. Three other women who were between the ages of 16 and 18 at the time tell the Post they too were pursued by Moore, but that he never forced them into any sort of relationship or sexual contact. The Post indicates that the women did not seek them out and that the paper contacted each of them separately. The Senate candidate, now 70 years old, denies the allegations, calling the report, quote, completely false and a desperate political attack. President Trump responded to the allegations overnight, the White House saying, quote, like most Americans, the president believes we cannot allow a mere allegation, in this case, one from many years ago, to destroy a person's life. However, the president also believes if these allegations are true, Judge Moore will do the right thing and step aside.
Stephen Colbert has more.
Besides the 14-year-old girl, the Post talked to three other women who say Moore pursued them when they were between the ages of 16 and 18, and he was in his early 30s. My God! These accusations are so damning, voters are either going to force him off the ballot or make him president. Moore's campaign has responded to the bombshell article saying, this garbage is the very definition of fake news, and adding that if the allegations were true, they would have surfaced during his previous campaigns. Your Honor, how could I be guilty of this murder if I wasn't caught till now? Think about it. And now, GOP lawmakers are asking Roy Moore to step aside if the allegations are true. But not everyone denounced Moore. For instance, Alabama State Auditor defended his friend not by saying he's innocent, but rather by saying that if he did it, it was totally cool. He said, take Joseph and Mary. Mary was a teenager, and Joseph was an adult carpenter. They became the parents of Jesus. Yeah, because Joseph didn't touch her. Their whole deal is that there was no funny business. She was the Virgin Mary.
Other officials from Alabama are also defending Moore. Daniel Dale, Washington correspondent for the Toronto Star, reached out to a few of them, detailing the responses on Twitter, many of them along the lines of Covington County GOP Chairman William Blocker, who told Dale he'd consider voting Moore even if hard proof of sexual abuse emerged. Quote, there is no option to support Doug Jones, the Democratic nominee. When you do that, you're supporting the entire Democrat Party, end quote. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and other Republicans in the Senate said Moore should step aside if the allegations are true. Senator John McCain is the only one who called for Moore to exit the race without the "if the allegations are true" qualifier, tweeting, quote, the allegations against Roy Moore are deeply disturbing and disqualifying. He should immediately step aside and allow the people of Alabama to elect a candidate they can be proud of. Rather than taking McCain's advice, Roy Moore is now fundraising off the story. As I mentioned earlier, the House Ways and Means Committee passed their version of the tax plan out of committee on Thursday, and the Senate released the first draft of its plan. There are notable differences between the two, as we learn from CNN.
The House collapses individual brackets from 7 to 4, with a top rate of 39.6%. The Senate, 7 brackets. The top rate, 38.6%. The House bill makes immediate a corporate rate cut to 20% from 35%. The Senate bill phases that cut in over a year. The House bill allows the state and local property tax deduction up to $10,000. The Senate bill repeals that entirely. The House bill caps the mortgage interest deduction for new mortgages at $500,000. The Senate bill leaves that untouched. With each difference, Republican members and no shortage of lobbying interests fighting to keep their own preferred route alive, potentially imperiling the bill each step of the way.
The Senate on Thursday unanimously approved a resolution to implement mandatory sexual harassment training for all senators, in addition to their staffers and interns. The measure was introduced primarily by Senators Chuck Grassley, Republican of Iowa, and Amy Klobuchar, Democrat of Minnesota. Under the legislation, lawmakers, aides, and interns will be required to complete the training within 60 days and at least once each congressional session. And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider a contribution. My work is 100% listener funded, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate. For a little bit more of what's going on in the news, we turn to our friends at the Talk Media News Service, TalkMediaNews.com, and Doug Christian's on the line today. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Nicole, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. So what's going on? Donald Trump is now off to Vietnam, huh?
It's crazy. My dear friend, I've known him for 30 years, just retired as ambassador to Vietnam on Saturday, actually. He had been in the State Department for decades and was fluent in Lao and Vietnamese, and he exited. And that of course is the story of the State Department right now, where Barbara Stephenson, who was the former ambassador to Panama, wrote a letter warning of the dire consequences of what she calls Trumplomacy, whereby the State Department is being gutted to the point that the State Department doesn't have the ability to do its mission and advocate for the United States abroad.
That's frightening. So your friend who retired, there's nobody there, nobody taking his place.
I believe there is.
Oh,
I mean,
really?
I'll tell you though. I mean, Ted Osius was. He was a true scholar, and he had, like so many lifers within the State Department, he was an erudite and experienced, And to replace somebody like that will take decades, frankly. And that's what Barbara Stevenson warned of. She said that it's going that these people that Tillerson is gutting, it's not as though you can just go on Indeed.com and get replacements. It's right. Not like that.
Although it seems that that's how the Trump administration is doing it, looking at how they're filling the judicial vacancies. I was just talking about the story of, Brett Talley, who was just cleared through the Senate panel to be a federal judge from Alabama, who is 36 years old. He's been a lawyer for a whopping 3 years. He's never tried a case. He's never even put forth a motion, from what I can understand. He was unanimously rated not qualified by the ABA, the second one of Trump's judicial nominees to get that unanimously rated not qualified by the ABA. I mean, it's really depressing.
So sad.
Yeah,
it's so sad. I mean, you know, I do believe that. I mean, it's one thing to be distressed about Trump, the man, the administration, but I mean, there's got to be a piece of us that wants at least the country to do well, even if it has to go through this dark time. And yet, we're not even getting that. I mean, we're not. This is a very, very distressing period of time right now, and it's very worrisome. And of course, today is what they're calling MAGA Day, Make America Great Again Day.
Who's calling it that?
The 1 year anniversary of this terrible election.
No,
I would call it
the election was 2 days ago. The anniversary was 2 days ago.
Yeah, that's right. But they're calling it MAGA Day, or Bannon is. However, I would call it Make America Banana Republic Again Day. Because Robert Mueller, as now it turns out, he's investigating Mike Flynn for a $15 million kidnapping plot.
Yeah.
And
explain.
Insane.
Will you explain this story? Because this is a new one.
Yes. Well, in fact, what had happened was that there was a Muslim cleric who was also a Kurdish separatist, and what had happened was that this person had actually been living in Pennsylvania. He was and Erdogan, the prime minister of the authoritarian prime minister of Turkey, had been requesting that this cleric had his name, it'll come to me in just a second, that this cleric actually extradited back to Turkey, where he may even face the death penalty for his political views. The thing is that Michael Flynn, it is alleged, it's been said in the Wall Street Journal and also in Red State, that, because Mueller himself is not leaking any of this,
right,
that Michael Flynn had been actually making a secret deal with Turkey to get paid off personally himself as the national security advisor to help nab Gulen, was his name, and have him kidnapped and brought back to Turkey, and Flynn's son were to be paid $15 million secretly by Turkey. This is insane. I mean, this takes the whole Russia probe to a whole different level. I mean, this is outrageous, and anybody of any stripe that could support this has to question whether their degree of tribalism has just bent so far that they've lost all sense of principle, what's right and wrong, and what is good for this country.
Yeah, I don't think they ever had any clue of what's right and wrong, and I don't think that enters into their calculations at all. It's about what's going to benefit each of these individuals in the Trump administration. They're all out for themselves, and with Trump being the top one on the list.
Well, Tuesday is an indication, but eventually this will not stand. I mean, there is. We still live in a country that goes by the rule of law, and eventually, people are gonna wake up and realize that their vote for Donald Trump didn't get them the golden whatever that they were promised. That they are actually maybe worse off, probably most likely worse off, especially if they lose their health insurance. Or these tax cuts aren't tax cuts. All they are is a way of redistributing wealth from people who are less well off mm-hmm. to richer people and mm-hmm. corporations. That's a tax cut, all right, for the people that need it least.
Right.
Yes. So I mean, we're living in a very, very distressing time. And of course, from what I understand here in Washington, there is a lot more of this kind of nonsense that Mueller is digging up, but none of us really know because nobody's speaking. But this within the administration or in Congress are saying, or the GOP are saying, that this investigation is winding down. It is not winding down. It's accelerating. It is actually getting more.
Right. And the thing is, we don't know what Robert Mueller is doing because he doesn't leak. And I think his people don't leak. And just like none of us heard of Papadopoulos before the story broke, he's doing things that we have no clue. We have no clue what's
That's
going
correct.
On.
Correct. He is bound by law not to leak. And at the same time, it's very interesting because it was the lawyer for Papadopoulos had made these sophistic remarks. No, it was the lawyer for Manafort had made these remarks after his he had turned himself in, making all these false claims. And the judge said, no, you may not do that. You may not speak. So
right.
Publicly.
Well, he put out a gag order.
Exactly, she did, and nobody contested that. The prosecution isn't doing this; only the defense. I mean, it is one thing for the defense to ardently defend their client, but it's another thing to just throw out false claims that are just that. That have no bearing on reality.
I hear you.
Yeah. And so anyway, they of course everyone's speaking of Roy Moore. He is just an indication of the weird state that the GOP has put themselves in right now.
Yeah. Well, The Republicans pulled the joint fundraising agreement from him, so they're not giving him any more money. At least that's a little bit of good news. I don't think Roy Moore will pull out of the race, but this may be as far as it goes.
Well, but of course, Roy Moore is an indication of the same kind of trend that President Trump led, because I mean, President Trump a little bit over a year ago was caught with his mouth open.
Yep.
And,
yeah, we had the Access Hollywood tape, and he's still president. But the atmosphere has changed since then. I think this country has gotten a lot less tolerant of those kind of behaviors since Harvey Weinstein. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes,
all
that's
right.
Exactly right.
All right.
Yeah.
Doug Christian from the Talk Media News Service, talkmedianews.com. Thank you, Doug.
Thanks, Nicole.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right. On the way, we've got Will Bunch is with us today. So stick around. He'll be with us in just a couple of minutes on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Who is the least deserving welfare recipient in America? I'll tell you today on Hightower's Radio Lowdown. Isn't it funny that right-wing politicians across the country piously rant against giving a few bucks worth of jobless benefits to the needy, then turn around and shove billions of our tax dollars into corporate welfare for the greedy? You're right, it's not funny. But here we go again. We're presently witnessing the most disgusting spectacle yet of the political corporate cabal extracting money from the people's wallets to enrich themselves. Amazon.com, the $136 billion a year internet colossus, has haughtily initiated a sleazy, self-serving public bidding war over where it will locate its new corporate headquarters. The city and state that offer the most bribe money to this private enterprise will be the winner. Uber-rich Amazon doesn't need and certainly doesn't deserve any public handout. But officials in 238 cities have prostrated themselves in front of this Amazonian welfare queen in embarrassing bids to win her nod. Amazon's arrogant executives even sent out a list of basic benefits they expect every applicant to deliver, including, quote, a business-friendly environment and tax structure, free land, a subsidy to reduce its operational costs, tax breaks, relocation grants for executives and workforce, reduced utility bills, and, oh yeah, also give us first-rate schools and an educated labor pool. As one analyst of Amazon's bribery scheme noted, these incentives aren't free. There's no fairy godmother paying for them. The typical result of corporate giveaways is that they cost the public more than we get back. By demanding such corporate spoils, Amazon brands itself as a common thief, not only taking our money, but also stealing our trust in the fairness of the system and widening inequality in our society. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help stop this corruption, go to goodjobsfirst.org.
If you'd like more of Jim Hightower's real populism, check out the Hightower Lowdown. Jim's monthly newsletter gives you the real lowdown on which corporations, by name, are doing what to the middle class, our environment, and our democracy. Each month, the Hightower Lowdown brings you facts you didn't know, along with actions you can take to fight back. It also comes with a sense of humor. Hightower believes we can fight the gods and still have fun. Plus, get this, it's cheap. Only $15 brings you 12 issues a year. For real populism, go to HightowerLowdown.org.
This is a huge, huge issue.
And we're talking about it. The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
All right. I'm calling Will Bunch. Let's see. We're trying to get through to him. I see it's still ringing. Hello. There he is. Hey, Will Bunch. It's Nicole Sandler calling.
Hey, Nicole. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good.
Good. Well, Will Bunch, of course, is a senior writer at the Philadelphia Daily News and columnist for the Daily News and the Philadelphia Inquirer and a friend of the show. On November 2nd, Will, you wrote a piece about our unfortunate relationship with guns and the fact that we had a shooter kill three people in a Walmart in Colorado and barely anyone took notice. And I reached out to you and invited you to come on the show this week to talk about it. And of course, just 3 days later, we had another mass shooting, this one, one of the worst in history, the shooting at the church in Texas where 26 people were killed. We have this.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing because actually the print, the new way we do things in the internet age, it was actually a print column for the Sunday paper. So, you know, people were actually reading that story around the time that the news was coming out of Texas.
Oh, my God.
You know, newspaper readers. I mean, normally as a journalist, you'd like to feel that you're, you know, prescient and predict events or on top of events or something, but that's one event I would never want to be on top of, you know. I mean, it was very timely, but I wish it wasn't, you know.
Right. No, and it seems like, you know, you write a story like this and you think, you know, you got a week's leeway perhaps in here where you could talk about an event. You started by saying, did you hear the one about the middle-aged white man who walked calmly into a busy Colorado Walmart on Wednesday night, pulled out a handgun, murdered three completely random shoppers, and then coolly walked away? You'd think you could get away with that for a week, but of course, there comes another mass shooting, something that's uniquely American, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's crazy. And well, I mean the point at the beginning of the column. And by the way, I mean actually the actual guts of the column deals a lot with the fact that not only have this crazy shooting in this Walmart in Ohio not gotten a lot of news coverage, but also with the fact that the Las Vegas shooting, which, I mean, of course, got a couple days of heavy news coverage because it was the largest shooting in U.S. history. But just how quickly it vanished, you know, without just, I mean, you know, I mean, stories don't last forever, but it was just weird. I mean, one, first of all, I guess we're never going to know why this guy, you know, committed the deadliest mass shooting in U.S. history. And, you know, I mean, you can argue maybe that's not important, and maybe we've reached that point where it's not even important to know why this happened. But that's one, number one. But I mean, more importantly, you know, somebody who writes about politics, I mean, just the lack of political follow through in Las Vegas. I mean, the lack of political follow through on the Newtown shooting in 2012 was horrible, but at least there were some actual efforts and there was actually a vote on legislation, which didn't pass. But we didn't even get anywhere near that after Las Vegas, the worst shooting, you know, and not only did 58 or 59 innocent people die, but I mean, 600 or 500 or 600 people were wounded. I mean, it's just unbelievable. You
it
know,
is that unbelievable. That could just, and there was some that, lip that, service. That, there was some lip service that there was going to be some action on those bump stock attachments that you can add to these assault weapons to turn them from semi-automatic into basically automatic machine guns, if you will. And then it went nowhere. Nothing happened, and people stopped talking about it.
Right, which is I mean that's amazing on a couple of different levels. I mean, on one level, I mean we do have the bare minimum, right, of gun laws in this country, and one of our bare minimum laws is that fully automatic weapons like machine guns are, you know, by and large 99% illegal, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, here's a device that makes a gun that is legal, although it shouldn't be, which is the next story, I guess. But I mean, you know, it takes a semi-automatic gun, which is legal, and makes it function like an illegal gun, an automatic gun. So why is it so hard to just to take a legislative act to make it clear that this is not legal? It's a very minor incremental step that just basically ratifies what's supposed to be the existing wisdom about guns and in this country. And you know, Congress can't even do that. I mean, like you said, I mean, it was talked about for a couple of days, you know, even one or two brave Republicans said they might support something like this. And, you know, and then it disappeared. I mean, part of that was, you know, the NRA, you know, is always never stops playing political games on this issue. You know, they put out a statement saying, yeah, we don't think bump stocks are really needed and they're not a good idea. But, you know, that really should be regulated by ATF, the U.S. Bureau of Alcohol and Firearms,
right.
Tobacco and Firearms. And that's just, they knew that it was kind of like sending a bill to committee to get killed, right? You know,
yes,
because
exactly.
They know that ATF doesn't really have the regulatory ability to do that, nor more importantly, they don't really have the regulatory will to want to do it. So, so they knew that was, you know, they were having it both ways. They were saying something that actually sounded reasonable for a change. And again, this is just a very minor, incredibly minor fraction of the gun problem in this country. But, you know, but they were really, like I said, playing political games. They actually knew that even that wasn't going to happen.
And
so,
that's what they do, though. Right, the NRA has less juice than the lawmakers understand. Right, the majority. If you look at all the polls, the majority of Americans, the majority of NRA members, for that matter, want to see more stringent gun controls. They want to see universal background checks. They want to see more regulation. Yet the NRA, who actually is the lobbyist for the gun industry,
right.
They put
exactly.
out.
I mean, yeah.
They put out their own talking points, and the lawmakers go along with it because with that comes money.
I think so. Although it's gotten to be like a really weird dynamic, right? Because the money, when you look at the money, you know, I mean, in the last 10 years, you know, especially since Citizens United and these other court rulings, you've had so much money, you know, from the Koch brothers and, you know, even a little bit on the left, but mostly on the right, you've had money come into the system. And when you look at what's happened with money in politics, the NRA money actually seems kind of small. You know, it's not that much money. And so people say, well, it's not really the money, it's the zeal and the enthusiasm of NRA members, which I think is true, but it's kind of weird. It's really though, it's like not even that, because it's like the zeal and enthusiasm of a minority of NRA members, because as you said, I mean, the truth is when you actually poll the whole membership of the NRA, the majority supports background checks. I mean, overwhelming majority would want to ban bump stocks, you know, and even I think, you know, a majority or close to majority would support an assault weapon ban. And, you know, when you look at it, I mean, banning bump stocks would be good. I mean, it would be more of like a moral victory at this point, just to show that we can do something, anything,
right,
which is
right.
kind of a shame that we've gotten to that point. But, you know, I mean, when you look at this wave of mass shootings that we've had in the last decade, the five worst mass shootings in U.S. history have happened in the last 10 years. And three of those five have happened in the last 18 months.
Right.
And when you look for, you know, there are differences, you know, one was by a guy who claimed he was, you know, a lone wolf pledging allegiance to ISIS, committed one of those, you know, other people had different issues. You know, I mean, the motives were different, but what was common between all of them was the gun, right? That they all used an AR-15 semi-automatic gun, or something that was basically a variation of that, or very similar. So you look at that, and it just screams out, why don't we ban the AR-15 semi-automatic weapon and weapons like it, and do it more effectively? I mean, and this was done in 1984 for 10 years. I mean, I'm sorry, 1994, excuse me, for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't done super well. I mean, there were a gazillion loopholes that people made minor modifications and said, hey, this is legal because we modified it or whatever. So, you know, I wouldn't pass the exact same bill they had in 94. I would make it more stringent. But, you know, I mean, you know, I'm sure there's some guy out in Kentucky who, you know, kills tiny varmints with his semi-automatic or something. And, you know, too bad for him. I mean, by and large, these are, you know, the idea that these are significant hunting weapons is ridiculous.
No, they're war machines. You know, they're killing
right.
machines.
And, yeah, exactly. And they're marketed by, you know, major gun companies making huge profits, you know, in magazines that appeal to men's sense of whatever, you know. it's a massive marketing ploy, and you know, and I'm sure the majority of people who buy these weapons, you know, are not deranged individuals who do this sort of thing. But it seems like we have plenty who are, and they don't really serve it. They don't really serve a good, legitimate purpose in American society, and it's time for them to go.
No, they don't. We have another disconnect, Will, and that is, as you write, the contrast between how our so-called leaders react to these mass shootings and how they deal with events that we're told are terrorist events. And of course, in this week, we also had the guy in New York who drove the truck down the West Side Highway where the bike path was, and he killed eight people and injured a bunch more. And the reaction to that immediately, Trump, you know, gets on Twitter and he says the guy's an animal who deserves the death penalty, and maybe we'll send him to Gitmo. And we lose a lot more people in this country to gun violence than we do to terrorism each year, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. Although with me so in Orlando, those two can merge sometimes.
Yes.
By and large, yes. And I mean that's the thing. I mean, the irony is that Trump proposed a couple of responses to the New York bike path incident that weren't brilliant policy ideas. You know, he said, you know, maybe we should ban people from Uzbekistan, which doesn't really sound right. You know, the whole travel ban thing, which hasn't really worked out. And then, you know, what extreme vetting, you know, and these things. And, you know, those maybe aren't the answers to dealing with terrorism, but on the other hand, at least it shows a willingness to admit that there's a role for government, right? That that when it comes to terrorism, there are things we can do. And if you look at the broader scope, you know, pre-Trump, back when things were a little bit more sane, if you want to go back to 2001, we did a lot of things in response to 9/11, and not all of them were great. You know, I'm not a big fan of the Patriot Act and some of the other mm-hmm. things that were done, but and certainly the linkage they tried to make between 9/11 and invading Iraq. So there were certainly some bad things done, to say the least. But on the other hand, there were some positive things done. You know, reinforcing the cockpits of airplanes. Right. No one has successfully, to my knowledge, broken into an airliner cockpit since 9/11. The TSA, which, you know, some people love it and some people hate it, but we basically seem to have eliminated plane hijackings as a significant problem in this country to worry about. We've had one or two people, I think, act up on planes, but I don't think any plane has been hijacked since 9/11.
Nope.
So those were things that we did in response to a problem in society, and they were effective. And I absolutely believe, the fact that other developed civilized countries around the world have all the same cultural issues we have, but don't have the rates of gun deaths that we have, either just, you know, daily gun carnage or mass shootings, either one. That alone is proof that there's something different about the U.S., and it seems like every study shows the difference is our gun laws.
Exactly. I tell the story fairly often. A few years ago, I interviewed Tim Fisher, who was the Deputy Prime Minister of Australia back in 1996 when they had their last mass shooting, the Port Arthur massacre. And in the wake of that, what they did was they enacted some sensible gun laws. They initiated a gun buyback program. And guess what? Since then, they haven't had another mass shooting. And it's because they don't have an NRA, the gun lobby. They didn't have the gun lobby that we have.
Right. And you know very well the whole history. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of things about culture and politics and race that are wrapped up in the whole fact that why we have something like the NRA and in Australia or other countries don't have them. And but we pay the price, you know. Mm-hmm. We have political groups that and business economic interests that, you know, make money off of fear and selling fear. And it's been very effective in the fact that you have now have more guns in circulation than citizens in this country,
which is stunning. Nowhere else
in the world has anything like this.
Right. I always say that I think that other nations should enact travel bans or travel warnings, at least alert their citizens that the United States is just not a safe place. You have a higher than average chance of getting shot by going to a concert or, a nightclub or just walking down Main Street USA than you do in any other country. You've got a greater chance of being shot.
No, you're right, Nicole, and unfortunately, that's exactly what's happened in some of these incidents, right? That some of the people, I think, in Orlando New York, which I guess again was quote terrorism unquote, but
right.
it wasn't guns, so it's not a good example. But in some of these other incidents, you know, we've seen foreign citizens get caught up in American gun
violence. Right, there was a tennis player from, I forget where, I want to say Sweden, but I could be wrong, who was going to school in Oklahoma, and he was out for a run on a Sunday afternoon, and three young guys were bored, and they shot him. This was, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago. That kind of stuff happens. It happens regularly in this country.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of fascinates me with this whole debate about terrorism, right? Because I mean, what is terror basically? Terror is the idea that you can be living your normal life and living responsibly and innocently or whatever you want to call it, and that you can still be taken down because of somebody else's violence, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, so we've defined that as only when it's done by Muslims or whatever. But what can strike more terror than the idea that, getting back to the column I wrote, you know, that you could be shopping in Walmart for socks, right? And
yep.
then some guy just walks in with a gun, shoots you and the guy shopping next to you, and then he walks out.
Yeah,
you know?
that's terrorism. It may not be, you know,
right. exactly.
Islamic terrorism, yeah. but it's still terrorism. If, you know, what happened in Vegas, that was a terror attack. It may not
right.
have been so a Middle Eastern terrorist, but it was a terror attack nonetheless.
Right, because the goal of terrorism is to make you afraid to live your normal life,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you're the world's biggest country music fan, and now all of a sudden you're afraid to go to country music concerts because you think that you never know the next time someone's going to do what this guy in Las Vegas did, that's the absolute definition of terrorism.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, no doubt.
Will Bunch is with us from the Inquirer and the Philadelphia Daily News. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the column you wrote just a few days ago, how the unfortunate events of election night 2016 became the nightmare America can't stop reliving. This piece, I felt it. There's that knot in my stomach that hasn't gone away in a year. And
the reason I wrote the piece is because I hear all the time, or I talk to people, or I read other people's accounts, and, you know, when people talk about Trump, you know, the majority of us who, you know, are horrified by what's happening in this country, when we talk about it, it comes up so often that people talk about that night and how it felt. And, you know, I knew I would get some grief for this, and I did get one or two upset emails or whatever, but minus people dying, you know, for half the country, it very much was like the JFK assassination, or even you could say 9/11. I mean,
yes.
Emotions are kind of different, but basically what.
Will, did I lose you? Uh-oh, I think we lost Will Bunch. Let me try to get him back on the line. Yeah, that was a day hold on. Let's try this one more time. Try to get Will back on the line.
Your call has been forwarded to an automated voice messaging system.
There he is.
Two.
Will.
One.
Whoops, whoops.
Five.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
hold on.
Yeah, I dropped. I don't know
eight,
what happened.
One. Five.
Hold on 1 second, Will. I think okay. I called you and it.
At the tone, please record your message. When you finish,
I've got you on the line as well.
Or press
you know what?
For
I'm going to call you right back. Will, you still there? See, he called me and then I hung up on him and then he called back. Oh, I hate it that happened. Let's try it one more time. Let's see if this works. I had to pull it down because. It was giving out his phone number.
Hello.
Hi, Will. Sorry about that. I called you back and the voicemail was coming on. Your phone number was going out over there, so I had to pull it down and I wound up hanging up on you. Anyway, yes.
Yeah. Because, you know, I think what's the commonality between something like, say, the
if
JFK
you're satisfied with the message, press
hold.
One. To listen to your message, press two.
Remember,
to erase
right?
and
but,
re-record, press
hold,
you know,
hold on
a
second, Will.
Where you left off, press
yeah.
four.
I think we're still connected to your voicemail somehow. I'm sorry. Go again. We totally missed
if
everything.
If you're satisfied
oh,
with the
no.
message, press 1. To listen to your message, press
Will,
two.
I'm
going to
erase let's hang up again and call me back, okay?
Right. Continue
this
recording.
Is, this
where
is such
left
great
off.
Radio.
Press 4.
All right. How do I get rid of this other one? Oh, this is such great radio. This is live radio,
if
everybody.
If you're satisfied with the message,
okay.
press 1.
Let me
to
get
listen
rid of...
to your message, press 2.
No.
To erase and re-record,
how do I
press
do
3.
This?
To continue recording where you left off, press 4.
It doesn't show me being connected to anybody here. This is so weird. Okay.
Sorry you're having trouble. Your message has been sent.
Okay,
please
good.
Try again later. Goodbye.
Goodbye. All right. Will, you back?
I'm here.
Okay, good. You're going to have a funky message on your voicemail, but that's finally gone. It's live radio.
Oh, okay.
What can I say? All right.
Yeah, okay. No problem. Well, we're still getting something. What is that? So what I was trying to say is that, why Trump's election night was a little bit like the Kennedy assassination is you wake up one morning and you think this country is one thing, and then you go to bed that night feeling you're in a totally different land, that it said America is not what it seemed to be. And you know, I mean, people felt that in different stories and different ways and in different places. But I mean, I think generally that's kind of the underlying emotion of what a lot of people felt on November 8th.
Without a doubt, without a doubt. And it's like, I don't know this place anymore. This, it felt like it's not my country. This total disconnect with how this could have happened. And we're looking at the consequences now a year later. I was talking about earlier about this guy who's just confirmed out of committee for a federal judgeship. These are a lifetime appointments. This guy has been a lawyer for 3 years. He's never tried a case. He got a unanimous unqualified from the ABA. He's going to have a lifetime appointment to the federal bench out of Alabama. And he's not the only one. The most unqualified people are being put in these positions of great power. And it's like nothing is as it should be.
No, I mean, people are just starting to take a look at who these second tier people that Trump has put in, you know, and it's like, it's like the guy from his golf club, you know.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's just crazy stuff. And then, not to go off on a whole tangent because it's a complicated issue, but, you know, just this morning, I mean, this story that, Michael Flynn was looking at this deal where he'd get $15 million for, you know, as he was in the process of becoming the National Security Advisor of the United States, hijacking and delivering this guy to Turkey. I mean, if that story is actually true, I mean, that's got to be the most massive money related corruption in U.S. history.
Absolutely.
If that's actually true, you know, and it's just something every day. But I do want to say one thing about the piece is, I mean, it was kind of a twist to it in the sense that, you know, on one hand, we have this compulsion kind of to relive the horror of that night. A lot of us do anyway, not everybody. Some people have done a pretty good job, I guess, of putting it out of their minds, but a lot of people, you know, relive it. But I think what I tried to make the point that there's something healthy about that in a way, because I think a lot of people have held on to how it felt that night as a motivator, right? You know, is a reminder never to get too complacent about anything. I mean, and ironically, the day that, you know, because the story went online Tuesday, election day, the day before the 1 year anniversary is when it went online. And, you know, look at what happened that night. You know, it was just a remarkable night for Democratic candidates all over the place. And I think the reason why that was because people who were horrified that night and have stayed horrified by Trump for the last year said, I'm going to do everything I can. And does it matter if I elect Democrats to my local school board? Yes, it does matter. People, mm-hmm. You know, whereas 2 years ago wouldn't care, because I know that, you know, I live just outside of Philadelphia in a suburban county, Delaware County, Pennsylvania, which is a, you know, large, I guess they call it a vote rich county or whatever. It's a big suburban county just southwest of Philadelphia. And, over the last 20 or 30 years, I mean, it's been ruled for decades by a Republican local machine, right? And over the last, 20 or 30 years, though, as the national Republicans have gotten more extreme, more and more people here in Delaware County have registered as Democrats. And yet in these off-year elections, they didn't vote, right? So just the Republican Party regulars were the only ones who showed up in the off-years when they elected, you know, the county council and the county clerk and the register of wills and all these things. And this year, lo and behold, the Democrats showed up. I mean, it was amazing. And everything that could be flipped in Delaware County, Pennsylvania, flipped. And it was all
in
was
so
all
many other places.
Trump, you know?
Right. So
yeah, right.
Maybe you we're know. Turning a corner. Maybe people have gotten a taste of what it's like when you, don't participate, or when you, you hold out. I hate the saying, but you let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Right.
And this is what you wind up with.
Yeah. When people were, so like gobsmacked by Trump's election, and it's like, how did this happen? And, a lot of people really did say, I want to do anything I possibly can. And so there's different, it's like if there's if there's a terrible bill in Washington, like repealing Obamacare, I'm gonna make that call to my congressman.
That's it.
Congress, look how many calls these people get. You know.
Yep.
If there's a march, you know, that's against Trump or against
show
one
up.
Of these issues.
Hey,
Will,
we're out of time, but thank you so much. I'll put links to both of these pieces we talked about on the blog today at NicoleSandler.com podcast. Thank you so much, Will. It's always great to talk with you. Will Bunch,
everyone.
It is
always great. Thanks for calling. All right, bye-bye.
We'll talk soon. Bye-bye. And with that, we're done for the week. Have a great weekend, everyone. I'll see you Tuesday back here at NicoleSandler.com and on the Progressive Voices Network.